So hello, everybody, and I'm so excited to present to you Jenny Noland, who is going to do a presentation for us on natural healing of thyroid disease, a silent epidemic. So Jenny is doing this for her certification requirements, and I'm so excited to see what she has to say. So take it away, Jenny.
Hi, everybody. I'm so excited to be here, and I really appreciate you all being with me tonight. This topic, the thyroid topic, is very near and dear to my heart because of my own personal experiences. I deeply believe it's something that's very crucially important for everyone, yet largely misunderstood. So today I would just, you know, use maybe 50 minutes to share what I have learned on thyroid function, including anatomy, types of thyroid diseases, possible symptoms, causes, diagnostic methods, lab testing, and lifestyle and medication strategies on how to optimize thyroid function. So due to the time limitation, I will just focus on talking about hypothyroidism, and maybe I will lightly touch on the hyperthyroidism. And then at the end, we can do a Q&A, and I'm more than happy to answer any questions you guys have. So before I go further, I would like to introduce myself a little more. I actually earned a bachelor's degree in accounting and also an MBA. So I was a hardworking business and IT professional for 15 years. While I enjoyed my business career, I found my focus shifting over time. And 9 years ago, I had a very, just a big health crisis. And I will share a little more about it later on. So that's when I completely changed my focus to nutrition and holistic health. So since then, I have received many nutritional trainings focused on gut function and also hormonal systems. The NEPT program is probably the biggest of all the trainings. Last year in 2018, I got certified as a digestive mastery coach by Dr. Rita Marie. And this year, 2019, I finally completed the whole NEPT program and am currently in the process of applying for NEPT certification. I have been running my own nutritional therapy practice in Eugene, Oregon, and it's been 4 years on this journey. So before I, I'm trying to go to the next slide. Okay. All right. So before I dive into the subject, I would like to read this disclaimer. The information provided in this presentation is for informational purposes only. Any information shared here is not intended as a substitute for the medical advice provided by your physician or other healthcare professionals, or any information contained in any product label. So I would like to kind of just take a few moments to talk about the prevalence of thyroid disease. And the numbers here we see on the screen, actually I extracted them from, from the American Association of Clinical Endocrinologists. So pretty much the first statistical research showed it's 1 in 10 Americans have thyroid disease. It's more than the number of Americans with diabetes. Since 1980, the fastest increase in cancer for women is actually not breast cancer, but thyroid cancer. So myself actually had thyroid cancer before, so I will share more about that just in a few moments. So women are over 5 times as likely to have thyroid disease as men. So some people say it's 7 times. The chances of having thyroid disease increase with time. So for women, it's 17%. For men, it's 9% by the time reaching the age of 60. And 50% of these people with thyroid disease are actually unaware of their condition, even with the treatment. There is a strong chance of being underserved, as many doctors rely on lab results, but not enough on symptoms. So why the conventional medicine has failed in treating thyroid disease, and myself, you know, is a, I don't want to see myself as a victim, but it was a very traumatic experience. So the first reason, as far as for what I have understood, is there's a huge lack of understanding of thyroid function in the medical community. The second reason is they always run the incomplete thyroid labs, and also they don't consider the symptoms. So if you combine those two, it leads to inaccurate diagnoses. The third reason is the medicine prescribed by most doctors. Most of them are synthetic medications, and for a lot of people, they don't work well. And also, there is a huge kind of ignorance on the impact of foods and nutrition. So nobody really talk about the foods and nutrition if you go visit a doctor, and that's what happened to me. And then the impact of thyroid dysfunction. That's a big long list. So the undiagnosed thyroid disease may put patients at risk for cancer, cardiovascular disease, osteoporosis, depression, infertility, chronic fatigue, adrenal dysfunction, just anything, right? That's a lot of body systems associated with thyroid dysfunction. So the pregnant women with undiagnosed or inadequately treated hypothyroidism have an increased risk of miscarriage, preterm delivery, and severe developmental problems in their children. So let's take a look at the glucose metabolism. So what is the connection here between thyroid dysfunction and glucose metabolism issue? So when there is not enough thyroid hormone being produced, the mitochondria in our cells will reduce the conversions of glucose into ATP. And then we have a lot of the unused glucose being stored in our body as fat, causing us to gain weight, right? So that's kind of a very strong connection right there. And we will also start to feel increasingly tired as the energy supply winds down and our body cutting down on the generation of the new cells may cause our nails to start to grow dry and brittle and our skin to become rough and thin and our hair to fall out. So those are the very common symptoms, and I will review a little more in details on the symptoms just in a few moments. So, and here I would like to share my own health history. And for many things listed on the screen, I have personally experienced. So about 9 years ago, I actually was diagnosed with thyroid cancer, but it wasn't diagnosed before the surgery. So all what I knew was I had nodules in my neck. So nobody at this point ever ordered any thyroid blood panel for me. So I had no idea even to this day whether I had hypo or hyper or Hashimoto's. So all what I knew was I had nodules in my neck. And they did the two biopsies within 2 years. The results came back negative, but then the nodules just started growing larger and larger, and my voice started getting hoarse. So it was becoming more and more uncomfortable for me. So I decided to get the nodules removed. So I underwent the surgery. And during the procedure, they did a kind of a quick lab testing, and they suspected it might be cancerous. So they decided to change the original plan. And they actually ended up removing the nodules as well as the whole thyroid gland. So because of this whole, you know, the surgery for doing this complete thyroidectomy, it actually increased the chance for having complications, which indeed happened to me. I had a complete bilateral vocal cord paralysis. So meaning like I couldn't talk, I couldn't breathe. And they had to do this emergency tracheotomy procedure to save my life. So that was a very, very traumatic experience that I had to endure. And following that was a very long recovery. So before the surgery, okay, so I had 7 miscarriages. Never knew what caused it because nobody checked my thyroid, right? Miscarriages kept happening. So that was like, you know, so now when, if I look back, of course, right, that was the reason. So, and then after the surgery, I have tried many medications, and I will talk a little bit about the medications later on, but it's just, you know, to totally depend on the medications will never be perfect, right? So at times the medications wouldn't work as much for me. So I would experience like the glucose issues, right? Insulin resistance. Sometimes the liver enzymes will elevate. Brain fog, and I have digestive issues. Adrenal fatigue, all of that. So pretty much I have experienced everything listed on the screen. So that is the impact of thyroid function. It's huge, really closely connected with pretty much every body system. Okay, so next, let's take a look at the thyroid anatomy real quick. So this is, of course, in the neck part, and we see the vocal box, right? And the pink color, butterfly-shaped gland, that's the thyroid gland. And the four, you know, the little brown spots on the thyroid gland, those are the parathyroid glands. So there's one thing I would like to actually point out for anybody who has had the thyroid surgery before. Definitely, I would recommend them check the thyroid parathyroid hormone after the surgery, because it's very easy to damage and to injure the parathyroid glands during the surgery. They could accidentally get removed or injured during the surgery. So the parathyroid hormone is mainly for, you know, for regulating the calcium level in the blood. So that's another topic, but I just wanted to point that out. So let's take a look at this, just this whole thing, the whole inner mechanism of how our body produces thyroid hormones. I actually see the whole thyroid system as the thermostat of the human body, because thyroid hormones actually regulate our metabolism, energy level, the growth and reproduction of every single cell of our body, every single cell. And the thyroid gland, actually, the way how it works is just a quick overview. It's like the thyroid gland takes the iodine and tyrosine to produce thyroid hormones. And then the hormones get released into the bloodstream. And then the hormones get inside of the cells to charge up the internal power batteries, which is just the mitochondria. So that's how it actually produces the energy in our body. So when we look at the whole system, right, it actually involves a few very key organs, hypothalamus, pituitary, and also thyroid gland. So hypothalamus is like a CEO. That's how I see it. Pituitary is like a manager, right? So hypothalamus will release the thyroid releasing hormone to pituitary gland, and then pituitary gland receives a signal and then releases thyroid stimulating hormone, which is TSH. And then thyroid gland gets the signal, right? And then it starts to produce the thyroid hormones. So that's kind of like a very overall picture of this, right? So, and then inside of the thyroid gland, it starts to produce four different types of thyroid hormones, T1, T2, T3, and T4. We have done a lot of studies on T3 and T4. We don't quite yet understand what T1 and T2 actually do at this point. So a lot of the 80 to 90% of the hormone produced by the thyroid gland is actually T4. So maybe 10% or less than 10% is actually T3. So these hormones get released into the bloodstream, and then our body uses the T3, which is the only bioavailable hormone that can be utilized, right, by our body. So the T4 is like a storage hormone, and then it gets converted into either T3 hormone or into reverse T3. So I'm going to just kind of dive a little deeper here, right, just to kind of talk a little bit more in details on how exactly this process works. So inside of the thyroid, the gland itself will induce a chemical process that converts tyrosine. Tyrosine is the amino acid in the high protein foods, right? So it actually converts tyrosine into a protein molecule called thyroglobulin, and it's designed to bind with iodine. And thyroid then combines a thyroglobulin molecule with 1 to 4 iodine atoms. So the number of the atoms attached determines the type of thyroid hormone. So we have 1 to 4 iodine atoms. That's why our thyroid gland actually produces 4 different types, right, from 1 to 4. So the T4 thyroid hormone is also called tyrosine, and it's a storage hormone and comprises, 80 to 90% of the hormone produced by the whole thyroid gland. So it's actually designed to circulate in the blood and stored in the tissues until thyroid hormones are needed by a particular area of our body. So these areas are actually where a lot of the T4 to T3 conversion happens. So how does this conversion exactly works, right? So it actually involves an enzyme called the deiodinase type 1. And this enzyme is actually used to strip off a single iodine atom from the outer lining of T4 molecules. So this enzyme is also mainly stored in the liver and also kidneys, brain, pituitary gland, muscles, tissue, skin. So these are the areas where this T4 to T3 conversion happens. So the T3 thyroid hormone is actually, I think it's about 10% of the hormone producing the thyroid gland. So what about reverse T3? The reverse T3 is actually created when a batch of the T4 is no longer needed. So which means, after it has outlived its kind of expiration date of potency, or if you have way too much T4 in your bloodstream. So just like how, you know, how and then your body, if you have too much of the T4, or, you know, so, and then that's when this whole conversion to reverse T3 happens, right? So after it's converted into reverse T3, it'll get flushed out of our body. Okay, so now let's take a look at the types of thyroid disease. So the majority of the thyroid diseases actually is pretty much, that's just kind of the hypothyroid, right? That's why that's the main focus of my talk tonight. The majority of the people who have thyroid disease actually fall into this category. It's about, I would say, 80% of all the thyroid cases. And within the hypothyroidism cases, Hashimoto's thyroiditis is the, I would say it's probably 70 to 80%. Some people say it's 90% of the whole hypothyroid cases, which is the autoimmune hypothyroidism. And then, so within the hypothyroidism category, there's another type, and I think it's very largely overlooked. So it's the peripheral tissue resistance to thyroid hormone. And I sometimes call it cellular level or tissue level hypothyroidism. So this has a lot to do with the insulin resistance, leptin resistance, and adrenal dysfunction. And I will explain a little more on, you know, the connection between hypothyroidism and these other conditions. So the next type of thyroid disease is hyperthyroidism, and it's roughly 15% of all thyroid cases. So within this category, Graves' disease, right, which is about 80% of hyperthyroid cases. And this is the kind of the hyperthyroid disease in autoimmune nature. There is another something called thyrotoxicosis. So this is actually, I wouldn't say it's a condition, but sometimes we see people kind of swing from hypothyroid to hyper. So that can go on for a while, and it's just, it's really hard to know what's going on. But then for most people like that, and for most of the times, they actually settle into hypothyroidism. So this term is just to describe, you know, it can shift from left to right like that. So this is why a lot of people, when they find out they have a lot of the thyroid hormones being produced, immediately they get put onto the medications to reduce their thyroid hormones, right? Because, you know, their doctors will think they have hyper or Graves, right? But a lot of times my recommendation for those people would be like, and not to immediately take the medication, but there are different, you know, herbs that can be used to manage it. Just kind of wait out a little bit until a clearer picture actually can reveal itself. So the last type is the thyroid cancer, which comprises about 1% of thyroid cases. And probably the most common thyroid cancer is papillary. And the second one is follicular. And the last two are the most dangerous thyroid cancer. So for my cancer, I think I had the mixture of papillary and follicular. They're generally considered probably one of the safest cancer because they don't spread as easily. And even nowadays, a lot of the thyroid cancer cases are no longer considered thyroid cancer anymore. So that's another thing I would like to point out. Okay, so here, the possible symptoms, right? That's a lot of symptoms. So on the left column, that those are the hypothyroid symptoms, and on the right is the hyperthyroid symptoms. There are some overlaps. So the bottom symptoms in green color, they're very similar, right? Very similar, the kind of the hypo and hyper, they share similar symptoms like hair loss, muscle weakness, and enlarged neck, miscarriage. And the middle part, those are like the kind of, I wouldn't say they're similar, but there are some maybe slight similarity to both of them. And on the top, in the red color, they're like the opposite symptoms, right? So I think you guys are probably very familiar with all the symptoms. I don't know how many of you actually have had the thyroid issues, but if you do, you're probably very familiar with the symptoms. So I've had a lot of them. I probably wouldn't spend the time to go through every single symptom, but this is just for us to kind of take a look. And if you want to take a picture, go ahead. And then if you have questions later on, we can come back to this slide. So now I would like to talk a little bit about the diagnostic methods. The first one, which is the easiest one that we can all do at home, is the physical exam, self-exam. So what you can do is to actually stand in front of the mirror, and then you swallow a little bit of water, and you lift your chin a little bit, and you swallow, and then you watch how the neck looks like, right? So when the water is going down, if there are some nodules and abnormalities in the neck, you should be able to see it when you're swallowing the water. So that's pretty easy to do. And the second one is the body temperature measurement. There are two ways to do it. The first one is the basal body temperature, where you measure your body temperature first thing in the morning. The second one is like an average body temperature measurement, where you measure the body temperature first thing in the morning, and after that, you know, 3 hours after that, and then you repeat 3 to 4 times a day. And then you can do that repeatedly, I would say for a few days or for a few weeks, and then you calculate for the average, right? So the ideal body temperature should be, I would say, around 98.6 or something. I would say at least it should be 98. So if it's below that, you can start to kind of do a little bit investigation on your thyroid function. So there's the blood test, right? So I will actually, I have another slide later on to explain the markers. So we'll actually dive a little deeper when that slide comes up. I would say once a year, this should be included as part of the annual physical for everyone. And if you do currently take thyroid medication, every time when you change the type of medication and also change the dosage, you want to do a thyroid panel 6 to 8 weeks after the change. And then there's the ultrasound. At the time of the diagnosis, I highly recommend that. Or every 6 months, if you know you have nodules and you feel like it's growing, so it's like twice a year. And if you don't have any thyroid issue, or you haven't really found any issue, I would still recommend people do like once a year neck ultrasound just to prevent it. Fine needle aspiration, that's the one that I actually got. I did it twice before the surgery. What I want to point out is that it's not always accurate. because it really depends on where the needle in the nodule touches, right? So it's not like the whole nodule is filled with cancer cells. It's generally, it's not like that, right? So if the needle doesn't touch the cancer area, the result will come back negative. So that's just something to remember. And then there's another method, which is excisional biopsy. So it's a little bit larger procedure than the fine needle aspiration, where they actually go in and maybe cut out a piece of the thyroid gland and then do the lab analysis on it. And the last one is the iodine uptake and thyroid scan. So a lot of people have got this one done. There's going to be a little bit radiation exposure, so I'm not a huge fan of this diagnostic tool. So let's take a look at the causes of hypothyroidism. Lots of them. Lots of them. So the first one is the medications and radiation exposure, right? So any medications listed here, or maybe even more than what I listed here, could cause the thyroid dysfunction, especially birth control pills. That's a very common one, and antidepressants and all of that. And the second cause is the pituitary gland dysfunction. So generally with this type of issue, we see the low TSH and the low T3 and T4. And there is the adrenal dysfunction due to chronic stress. So how does it work here, right? So why the chronic stress actually affects the thyroid health? So the concept here is that the cortisol, you know, when it's one of the hormones released by the adrenals during the stress response. So the prolonged cortisol elevation decreases the liver's ability to clear the excessive estrogens from the blood. An excessive amount of estrogen increases the levels of thyroid binding globulin, and which is a protein that thyroid hormone is attached to as it's transported throughout the whole body. Which means the high cortisol can actually cause high estrogen. And then high estrogen can cause high thyroid binding globulin level, and it can be measured through the blood test. So the more thyroid binding globulin you have, the more thyroid hormones are bound to this particular protein, which actually results in low thyroid hormone that can be utilized by our body. So when the thyroid hormone is bound to the thyroid binding globulin, it's actually inactive. So it has to be cleaved from thyroid binding globulin to become a free fraction before it can activate cellular receptors. So that's how this connection is between cortisol and the cortisol, why it causes the low thyroid, the hypothyroid symptoms. And then, so that's the connection right here. And also there could be a conversion issue between T4 and T3. So a lot of times the conversion happens, as I said earlier, it happens in the liver, in the gut, and at the tissue level as well. So if the liver doesn't function well, that's really where 20 to 30% of the conversion happens, right? So now, you're going to end up having low thyroid, the low T3, right? So if your gut health is not optimal, again, if you have, these infections, H. pylori, parasites, Epstein-Barr virus, that's also going to affect the conversion. And also insulin resistance and leptin resistance could also, lower the thyroid hormones. So what's the connection here? Because insulin resistance can cause, the inflammatory states. And the inflammation actually can depress the thyroid receptor site sensitivity and produce hypothyroid symptoms. So this is what I think that's the cause, the main cause of the tissue level and cellular level hypothyroidism. And also on the nutrition side, if somebody has food sensitivities, like, you know, the gluten, dairy, soy, corn, eggs, peanuts, you know, those things can also trigger this inflammatory response, right? That's also, that could also be a contributor to hypothyroid. And also the deficiencies in protein, vitamin D and selenium and zinc, and also ferritin and B vitamins, as well as iodine. So those can all be the contributors. And there also comes the toxins, right? Which is a huge part of this whole, the thyroid dysfunction cause. So there is the toxic chemicals, right? All kinds, as we know. And the halogens, right? The halogens actually include iodine itself, fluoride, bromine, chlorine, and also perchlorate. So here, the iodine is actually listed as the nutrition deficiency line here, and also it's listed in the toxin category. So it's one of those trace minerals. I see it as a Goldilocks trace mineral. We have to have it to produce thyroid hormones. But we probably don't need excessive amount of it. And I know it's kind of controversial and people have different opinions about it. And people also believe the iodine can be used to actually clear out, you know, these other halogens in our body. But my experience working with different clients, I think it's a little different for everybody. Sometimes it can really exacerbate the hypothyroid symptoms. For some people, they can, you know, they can tolerate it pretty well. So that's just, I think it's very individual. And also the mercury, lead, arsenic, those heavy metals can also be a huge contributor in this whole hypothyroidism, especially Hashimoto's. And I have worked with different people who are exposed to mercury and arsenic, and they have Hashimoto's. So the Hashimoto causes, right? So there's a difference between the normal hypothyroidism and the Hashimoto thyroiditis. The Hashimoto's, we all know, it's the autoimmune type of hypothyroidism, right? So there are generally three, I call it a three-legged stool. So you have to have these three components at the same time in order to develop this condition. So there is a genetic component here, and there is the leaky gut, and also the environmental triggers listed, you know, on the top of this page. So this is the cause of hypothyroidism and the hyperthyroidism. So it's kind of like, I won't go into the details here, right? So it's a little different. So maybe I will just skip it. And then if you guys have questions, we can come back to it later on. So let's take a look at the blood panels. So the markers listed on the top of the screen are, I would say, the common. They're probably, I consider them the complete thyroid panel, except for the last one, the PTH and calcium. Those are the markers I would recommend for somebody who has had a thyroid surgery before. But TSH, total T4, total T3, free T3, free T4, reverse T3, and also the ratio between free T3 and reverse T3. So that's really not one marker, but we can manually calculate it once we have, you know, all the above markers done. So, and then I listed the optimal range. So the numbers you see beside each marker is really not a lab reference range. So I listed the optimal range that I use, and I know everybody has their own ranges, right? So this is the range that I kind of, that I actually apply in my practice. And it's pretty helpful. And I would say, you know, if you have a different range, that's totally fine, but it should be kind of close to what you see on this slide. So let's just say if, and I won't go into the details as far as for, you know, how the interconnections between these markers, because I think in Dr. Rita Marie's thyroid mastery module and assessment module, it has a lot of great details in there. What I want to say is, let's just say if somebody walks in the door and they got all these markers tested and they are all in the optimal range, but they have all the symptoms of hypothyroidism, what can we do? So what I would like to do, of course, is to review their history, right? Health history, their lifestyle, and their just kind of a diet and all of that. But there might be it might be necessary to run a few more markers, right? So we want to see how their vitamin D level is. And we also want to see, you know, I just now mentioned about the thyroid binding globulin. And also there's another marker called the sex hormone binding globulin. So I like to run those two markers as well, if it's not a very kind of a clean cut case. So we understand the thyroid binding globulin and its mechanism with how it actually binds with the thyroid hormones, right? And how it can elevate and reduce the actual thyroid hormone just a few minutes ago. But what is the relationship between sex hormone binding globulin and the thyroid hormones? So here is my understanding about its relationship with the thyroid hormones. So the role of sex hormone binding globulin is to regulate and transport sex hormones like estrogen and testosterone. So the way how it works is a little bit similar to thyroid binding globulin. It's actually mainly produced in the liver, and its main job is to bind to these sex hormones and shuttle them to the tissues in our body. So when bound to the sex hormone binding globulin, it actually is, so when the sex hormones are bound to this, right, it's not free. And then if there is an imbalance there, it is going to cause imbalance to everything else, right? So let's just say you have this low level of sex hormone binding globulin. So what's going to happen after that is it's going to cause excess estrogen, because you don't have enough binding globulin to bind the excess estrogen, right? So you end up having a lot of estrogen in the body. So when you have too much estrogen, it actually increases the amount of thyroid binding globulin, which actually could result in low thyroid hormones. So that's the interconnection between these hormones. And lastly, the antibodies, right? So if a person has never got their antibodies, the thyroid antibodies checked, and I would strongly recommend them actually get it checked up, and it could be part of the complete thyroid panel. So for Hashimoto case, the two antibodies that are often tested are thyroid globulin antibody and thyroid peroxidase antibody. So we want them to be as low as possible. Some labs have different ranges, but you know, I would like to see them below one or two, right? To test Graves' disease, you know, we can also test, you know, TPO And there are two other antibodies, which is the TSI antibody and also the thyrotrophin receptor antibody. So that's for Graves, and we're not going to go into the details of that. So these are the thyroid markers, you know, the blood markers for detecting thyroid dysfunction. Okay, so let's see how to manage hypothyroid. Stress management, that's the top one, right? That's the first thing I would like to recommend for anybody. Remove toxins. So I would say the toxins part is very tricky. When it comes to either halogens or heavy metals, it's really, really hard to detect them, to test them, and also to apply any detox protocol to remove them from the body. So actually, when it comes to iodine, right, iodine could be a toxin if it's too much. And I do put this daily recommendation, like 150 to 300 micrograms per day, and maybe no more than 1 gram a day. That's what I recommend. We can also get some from the foods. So I know there is the iodine loading testing. So, you know, that can be actually incorporated as well, just to actually assess if a person is very deficient with iodine. But I would be cautious to use large amount. The halogens, heavy metals, and also other chemical toxins, you know, there's just not a lot of good ways to get rid of them. And what I actually have experienced for myself is I would use infrared sauna because I used to have high level of perchlorate. Don't know where I got them, but I, from the regular infrared sauna, I was able to lower significantly, you know, on this perchlorate level. The heavy metals, that's another big topic right here. So we can do the hair testing and the blood testing on the heavy metals, but that's a huge topic as well. I have worked with some clients who actually do have the heavy metal exposure. So that can actually... that can be a huge cause of Hashimoto's. The food triggers, right? So the calorie-restricted diet, that could be a trigger as well. And also the sensitivity to certain foods, gluten, dairy, soy, corn, eggs, or maybe nuts and seeds. So for Hashimoto patients, the food sensitivity IgG test is recommended just to detect if their immune system is reacting to something that they're eating. So to manage the hypothyroid or Hashimoto's, we can use herbs and we can actually, you know, just kind of address the nutrient deficiencies like vitamin D, vitamin A can be also helpful. It helps the T3 hormone to get into the cell. And we want to make sure we actually, you know, have the sufficient amount of iodine, and selenium and zinc can both help with the T4 to T3 conversion. The B vitamins can also be helpful, as well as magnesium and also omega-3 fatty acids. And the herbs listed below this line in the herbs and supplements section can also be incorporated as well to boost their thyroid function. And when it comes to diet, okay, we want to make sure they're not eating anything that can cause their, you know, immune response, right? And also I strongly recommend this anti-inflammatory way of eating and focus on reducing the inflammation. And this is crucially important for Hashimoto patients or for any autoimmune, right? For anybody who has any type of autoimmune disease. Tyrosine is definitely want to make sure we intake enough of it. So pretty much we just need to eat, you know, enough protein. I do like to recommend eat protein for breakfast, because we want to start the day with eating something that can feed our thyroid gland, right? So that our thyroid gland can actually start to produce enough thyroid hormones to help us get through the day. So some iodine, maybe the sea salt, sea vegetables, and I actually just take, I myself also take it, the trace mineral supplement with the breakfast, right? So how many people eat the sea vegetables for breakfast? Probably not a lot. But so I like to use this trace minerals supplement. So also, this is another big area for managing hypothyroid, the gut infections. So it's a lot of people have gut infections for, you know, especially people who have Hashimoto's, because there's such a close relationship between the viral infection, you know, bacterial infection, parasitic infection, also candida, yeast overgrowth, you know, and this the hypothyroid condition. So we can use, I like to use the stool testing to screen them and also the lab testing for viral infection. And then whatever we can find, we can apply the gut protocols to actually eradicate them. But this is a big area. It's complicated as well. So, and now I would like to just kind of talk a little bit about the thyroid hormone medications, you know. So a lot of times after you actually have done all these other things, right, you balance the nutrition, you removed the toxins. What if you know, a person still doesn't feel better? So there are times when the thyroid hormone medications are needed. I don't recommend the over-the-counter thyroid glandular remedies because the potency is not consistent. So some of the medications you see on the screen are commonly used. First of all is the LDN, which is low-dose naltrexone. So that's pretty commonly used for Hashimoto's. And it's actually for, you know, it works as an immune modulator and it could reduce antibodies. And also the synthetic hormones, which includes the synthetic T4 medication, synthetic T3, and also there's a combination of the synthetic T3 and also T4 medication called the Thyroler. And I believe it's produced by Forest Labs, who also produces Armour Thyroid. And as far as for the fillers and inactive ingredients in these medications, I think it's really, really important and they can really play a huge role on the absorption. So myself actually have tried pretty much all of these medications, except for this Thyroler. So from my own experience, my body just does not handle the, you know, the generic brand very well. But it can be different, right? It can be different for everybody. So what I'm trying to say is, you know, you want to just kind of, just really kind of closely monitor it. If somebody doesn't respond to a certain medication and then you want to switch to another one. For me, Synthroid always works better than levothyroxine. Cytomel always work better than levothyronine. And then here comes the natural desiccated thyroid medication. I have also tried all of them. So Armour Thyroid, that's what I'm on currently. I have also tried MP Thyroid, Nature Thyroid, WP Thyroid, all of them. So I would say so what are the benefits, right, of the natural desiccated thyroid medication? So I think the first benefit is that they all contain a full range of, you know, the T hormones, T1, T2, T3, and T4, all of them. They also contain thyroid globulin protein, which actually can slow the dissolution of the T3 hormone. And if your thyroid still partially functions, right, these natural medication can actually boost, you know, the opportunity for your thyroid to become healthy again. So those are the benefits. There are downsides. The downsides would be sometimes the potency between the batches can vary. So you might see the fluctuations, you know, from month to month, right? Even though you're taking the same brand of the natural medication. But again, it's just so that's kind of a downside compared to the synthetic version. Personally, for me, WP thyroid worked the best. So the MP thyroid was kind of okay, but nature thyroid really didn't work for me. So that's just my personal experience. And then again, it's probably different. And if you're on the natural desiccated thyroid medication, I would strongly recommend getting the thyroid panel tested every 3 months, so that if something is not working, you can catch it early enough. So these are the things we can do for managing hyperthyroid. So I'm not going to go into the details again. All right, so now I would like to circle back to my own story. I still think about it. I don't really regret anything because there's nothing, I can't go back. But I often think, what could I have done differently? I think to live without a thyroid gland is very challenging. And I think it's going to be this way for the rest of my life, right? So oftentimes I would still think, were there any things I could have done differently, or the doctors could have done differently, so that I could end up still having my thyroid gland at this point, right? So the first thing I would say is, once the miscarriages happened, some regular thyroid exam or the thyroid blood testing, if that had been done, that would be great, right? That would really be helpful for me to discover what was causing the miscarriages, right? And it could prevent what actually happened from that point on. And then when the thyroid nodules were detected, also nobody ordered the blood panel for me to test these thyroid markers. And that's another miss. That's something that was really kind of just overlooked. So if people have thyroid nodules, they definitely, I would recommend them get the blood panel done. So also the nutritional status, right? That's something I wasn't aware of. I wasn't a nutritionist back then. So this is something, once we find out, oh, there's a thyroid issue, we definitely want to do some work on the nutrition side of it. And also maybe we can utilize the natural and herbal modalities, you know, before making a decision to go for any surgical procedure or radiation treatment. I deeply believe if I had done all of those things, I don't think I would need any thyroid surgery, or at least not the complete thyroidectomy. It should have been avoided. And also I received the radiation treatment a year after the surgery. I think that was not necessary either. So if I had the knowledge back then, I would not do any of these things, right? I would probably talk to the doctor before the surgery. I would want them to run a thyroid panel, you know, or repeat these panels on a regular basis to monitor it, right? So those are the things I think about a lot. And also these are the things I actually do use as a reminder to help with my clients. So a lot of the damages could have been prevented. So where should I start, or where should anybody start from here? And I truly, truly believe the future of the medicine is the patient. From my experience, it's kind of just like, that's why, you know, I became such an advocate for my clients who ever have thyroid issues, right? I want them to be informed and to be educated so that at least they know what to even ask, right? To when they talk to their doctors. Managing the stress level is a big part. And I just know back then I was under a ton of stress. So that certainly didn't help me, right? That was a huge part of the contributor to that led to thyroid disease and thyroid nodules. Balancing the nutritional status, right? Everybody should do that. The annual thyroid screening, which includes the complete thyroid blood panel, ultrasound, and also the physical exam that we can do at home on a regular basis. Okay, so I think this is the last slide. All right.
Wow. You did a wonderful job. That was very thorough, very detailed.
Oh my gosh.
Well-researched. So way to go.
Amazing Thank you.
Job. Isabel had to leave, but she said a great presentation, Jenny, very detailed signing off. So, yeah. So awesome. Awesome job.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Yeah. And
I think it's a good reminder for everybody. And really a lot of it where we go and we talk the pillars, right? The foundations, right? So even if you don't have all this detail mastered yet, when you start with the managing the stress, nutritional balance, avoiding the toxic exposures, right? Sleep, all of those things, environment, those are all the pillars for avoiding the thyroid situation and helping people. And what you recommend is getting the testing done. So as soon as there's an indication, or checking the symptom survey, right? Mm-hmm. Just doing the symptom survey and going, whoops, what's going on with my hair? Or why is my body temperature off? Or why am I always cold? And going, okay, what is this? And I love the way you presented the resistance, because that's such a biggie that the doctors don't even think about. Oh, you have no thyroid. Let's just give you this for your constipation and this for your depression, this for your, you know, they don't think about, wait a minute, hormone resistance. Do you have a blood sugar imbalance? Do you have insulin resistance or early signs of insulin resistance? So you just tied it all together really beautifully. And I just want to congratulate you.
Thank you. Thank you.
And I think this, you know, just tuned down a little bit, right? With maybe a good amount of this, but maybe a tiny bit less detail, would be an amazing community presentation to introduce people to the idea that don't wait and trust your doctor Mm-hmm. to diagnose you with this. Here's how you can figure it out. I love how it's empowering to people to say, okay, go to the mirror, right? And I could see you doing this in a presentation where you have a mirror, right? And you can even pass it around. And here, take your water, swallow it, take a look. You know, this is what it would look like. It's very empowering mm-hmm. for people to go, okay, I'm going to detect this stuff before it becomes serious. And I think for you, because you had this story, telling your story, and I like the way you interspersed it throughout. You didn't just tell your story at the beginning. You just interspersed it, and then you even came back to it at the end. What would I have done differently had I known? And I think for presenting that to the community, doing that on a webinar, doing it on a stage, doing it at a community center, right? That is so powerful, because you're empowering people to take a look and take charge. And then you tied it all back to the pillars, right? Stress, good nutrition, avoiding exposure. So beautiful, beautiful job.
Thank you.
You passed. No.
Oh, thank you.
Excellent.
Thank you.
Excellent. Yeah. So I want to see, Valerie says, very good. I definitely want to get a copy of your slides. Is that you willing to share your slides?
Sure. Yeah.
Okay, yeah. We'll make sure we get that. And we'll definitely put that with your, you know, record and stuff. And we'll put it up on the page. I love to put people's stuff up on page. It may scare some people to go, oh my God, I can't do that yet. But what she did was over and above and amazingly beyond. What we're asking you to do for some of this stuff is like a 20-minute presentation. I love that you did what you did, though, because it lets people see what's possible. And I also think that this is something you need to start doing on webinars and in your community, on Facebook. Just get on Facebook Live and show your slides and share with people a YouTube video, whatever. And then you have your link to your website to say, hey, you know, if you want to talk about this further, contact me, because people are going to go, oh my God, I had no idea. So
yeah,
good job.
I've done this workshop locally in the local communities. Yes, several times before, but I added more details today because, you know, we're professionals. So it wasn't, you know, I mean, it didn't have these many details before, but yeah. I added more. Yeah.
That's what I was thinking, if you had a little less of that detail.
Yeah, then.
Some of you lose some of the people with some of that stuff.
Yeah.
So awesome job. Anybody else want to share anything or have questions? Lynn Rose said very thorough. Let's see. Martha, great job. Janine, great job. Let's see. Claudia has a question about your breakfast suggestion. What if you don't eat breakfast? You know, those of us who do the intermittent fasting and don't eat noon or two, is it okay to eat protein later in the day? And which plant protein do you recommend?
Yeah. So I you know, it depends on if you do the intermittent fasting every single day, or it's only like one or twice a week, right?
Yeah.
So I think, let's just say if you skip breakfast, you can still add protein for lunch, whenever you eat the first meal. Yeah, whenever, right?
Yeah.
And then maybe some iodine to be combined with the protein.
Right. Or sea vegetables, right? Sea
vegetables, yeah. Oh. Yeah. Or trace mineral supplements, whatever is convenient for you. Mm-hmm.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. I stick kelp into my smoothies and into my sauces, and you know, I just kind of sprinkle it very widely. And I want to go back to what you said about the iodine supplementation. And some of you might be thinking, well, I heard you say, you know, give people 25 to 50 microgram, 50,000. And I do that when I've done an iodine load test with all of the halogens. And what I saw was that when they did the iodine load, their excretion of, say, bromide or fluoride or chloride went up. That says to me, oh, their tissues are storing excess of the other poisonous halides, which can be poisoning the thyroid. And so we work with them to do higher doses temporarily of the iodine until they've released all of the storage of the other halides that interfere, and then, you know, going back down to kelp, right? Because that's really the best way.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah. Oh, you know, Claudia's question for the plant protein. Plant protein, easy. You can do chia seeds, hemp seeds, right? Any plant-based protein powders, quinoa, maybe, right? Quinoa porridge, that's what I do in the morning, combined with the soaked chia seeds.
Mm-hmm.
Add a little bit protein powder in my porridge.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I haven't been doing it a lot, but I find it so filling. I had it for lunch today. I took some protein powder. It was the collagen, the Sun Warrior plant collagen peptides. Yeah. And I put it in the blender with frozen zucchini and some chocolate powder and stevia. And I smushed it up, and it was an ice cream. And I'm thinking, I'm feeling like guilty that I'm eating this for lunch. I'm like, wait a minute, what are you feeling guilty about? It's zucchini and plant protein and stevia. But it felt like I was eating a chocolate sundae, you know? And I'm full, like, hours and hours later. I'm like, I don't think I need dinner today because it was so filling. So there's lots of ways that you can do that. And I find that protein powder or concentrated, if I put a lot, I make like a hemp seed dressing for something. I do that a lot. It's very filling. It's very satisfying. So, yeah. I didn't even have fat in that. I mean, I just realized that. Usually when I make an ice cream like that, I had a handful of coconut or, you know, something with fat. I didn't even put fat in it. So, but it was just very filling. So there's lots of ways for us to get that. Mm-hmm. And for us to teach people, right? You can have your ice cream and get your protein and omega-3s at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Good job. Anybody else have questions or comments? Let's see. I'm looking. Claudia loved it. My sister has hypothyroid, so this is very useful. She's on meds, would love the slides. Yeah. I love that you recognize how digestion in the liver is related. When the liver is stagnant, a lump may be felt in the throat, even though you can't correct it. No one cannot physically be found. Okay, so you're going to have that lump. And the fact that you explained, you know, that's a warning sign when you start to have a hoarseness in your voice, mm-hmm. that there may be some overgrowth in the thyroid. I mean, it could also be dehydration too, right? But it very much need to know that can be thyroid. So if you're losing your hair and your skin is getting dry and you're constipated, right. and your voice is hoarse, really need to be checking this. The other thing, I liked what you talked about. Oh yeah, with so important for the conversion. We talk about that in the thyroid module a lot. But the conversion is so important. And I've heard as much as 50%. I think you said 30% in the liver, but it could, and it varies from person to person, but it could be as much as 50% in the liver. So if you do have, like Janine with the, you know, having had liver cirrhosis and things like that, a lot of that conversion isn't going to be happening the way it should. Or people with leaky gut or Crohn's disease or ulcerative colitis, that 25% or so that's supposed to happen in the gut is not happening. And that's the big piece that medicine overlooks, mm-hmm. is let's support liver and detox and gut health. And wow, suddenly the thyroid gets better, which is kind of why my thyroid is higher up in the pyramid, because it's so dependent on all those other pieces, right?
Yeah.
And the adrenal interaction. So you covered everything, which is beautiful. You know, the estrogen, the thyroid binding, the sex hormone binding globulin. Although I see elevated sex hormone binding globulin more than I see low sex hormone mm-hmm. binding globulin. And then you have the opposite problem where your estrogen may look fine, your testosterone may look fine, but it's not functioning fine because you have this elevation of sex hormone binding globulin, and that can affect the thyroid binding as well. So mm-hmm. it's just what you did here was you tied so much together, which points out to us how important it is not to look at it like medicine does with specialties, the GI specialist and the kidney specialist and all this, because they're all so, so tied together that we really do need to be able to look at the person as the big whole. And that was really well done.
Yeah. 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 I just feel like my case is just such a whole mess in every single way.
Yeah. You have everything.
A huge mess. Yeah. I just wasn't even given a chance of telling them whether I wanted to keep my thyroid gland or not. Right?
They took it when removed.
Yeah. So that was, it was very hard to swallow, actually, even to this day. Mm. Because I know my life would have been much easier if I still had my thyroid gland.
Yeah.
That was the biggest, I wouldn't say it's regret, but it's just the biggest issue I had with the way how they handled it. Yeah.
Right. And you're forever, you have no choice but to be on thyroid medication for the rest of your life. Mm-hmm. And you're at the mercy of these companies, which may change the formulation and add an excipient that you didn't know. And you're not like, so really reading everything before you get a new prescription is super important, because they do change it. They change the binders. They change the fillers.
Oh yeah, they do.
And then didn't you have an experience where?
Oh yeah. Yeah. So last year I kind of shared with you, and some of you maybe also, last year in the summer, time I started feeling really bad, and I ran a thyroid panel for myself. My TSH was 150. That was just unheard of.
You were still on whatever medication.
I was taking Nature Throid.
Okay.
But also at the same time, I believe in that time frame, I was taking a high dose of iodine.
Mm.
So I did talk to Dr. Wilson. Mm-hmm. I had a chance to talk to him on the phone.
Oh, nice.
The first question he asked me was, did you take high dose of iodine in that time frame? And I said, I did. So his guess was the iodine, sometimes the high dose of it could cause the TSH to be highly elevated. But he didn't say, oh, that'll make you feel bad. But he said you could actually ignore that if you still feel normal.
Yeah.
Just some kind of reaction, right? Because
yeah, he said that it could be that actually for 3 to 6 months as you're right. I remember him saying that in one of his talks.
So I don't believe it was the iodine because I was not feeling well at all. You know, so I do believe it was the nature thyroid because they changed their supply, the sources of getting the supply. So I think there's kind of a potency issue.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So and then you switched, right?
So I switched to MP thyroid right away. And then within 2 weeks, my TSH came down.
Yeah. So this is something to really keep in mind when you're working with people who've been on thyroid medication for a while and they're suddenly feeling awful. Right. Yeah. Is to test them and then to check that they didn't change the formulation. I had someone who she was on Synthroid and then Cytomel and her levels were staying and she wanted to switch because she was an MD. So she knew what she was doing and she wanted to switch to like a more of a compounded so she can control the amounts better. And she switched to the compound based on the numbers and awful. The numbers went wacky. And then she switched back to the Cytomel and they went back to normal. So she just, the generic did not work for her.
That's the same for me. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Did not work for her at all. And we had to go back to the Cytomel.
Yes, that totally is me. I experienced all of that. The generic brand never works for me.
And a lot of times, you know, the generics can be purer. You can get a purer compounded and you don't have all the excipients. And that's what she wanted to be away from was some of the excipients in the Cytomel that she knew she was sensitive to. But every time she tried to switch off of it to the generic, it didn't work well. So it was really, it's really very unique how everybody responds.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know? Yeah, totally.
So we have to be aware of all this when we're working with people because their MDs are not, their endocrinologists are not going to be aware of it.
Right. Yeah. Totally. Cool. Yep.
Right. Yeah. So thank you very much for doing that.
Well, thank you for giving me the opportunity to finish this topic.
Oh, you know what? I also want to say you had that nice chart of the hyper. And I would say that hyper, you want to look at the herbs that are good for hyperthyroid, because if someone has hypothyroid, those are contraindicated. So you want to make sure that you know those, like ashwagandha, bugleweed, lemon balm, those are all good for hyperthyroid. So it means don't take them or don't let people take them if they're hypothyroid, right?
It.
So
it's
a really good thing. And so I would say in your presentation, if you're doing that in the public, say to people, look, this is what's good. We're not going to go into too much detail on hyperthyroid, but I do want you to be careful. These are the things that are used naturally to manage hyperthyroid. So if you have hypo, these are no-nos for you.
Mm-hmm. Got it. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's super important.
Yep.
Okay. Thank you. Thank
Thanks.
You.
Thanks. Yeah. Thank you.
Good job. Woohoo. I love hearing. I love seeing this. You did really well. It's always harder to do it for your peers than it is for clients.
Yes. Clients, more pressure. Right? More pressure. Going, yeah.
They probably all know this. What if I say something wrong? What if, right?
That's right.
Public, you can say something wrong and they wouldn't know, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I think everybody already knows this stuff, right?
If they've been through the thyroid module, they should.
Yeah.
Right. But you imparted uniqueness in terms of your story, right? And that's where it was really valuable. And that's also why I'm asking for people to come and talk at Shine to share the perspective, especially it doesn't have to be a client case. It could be your own case.
Yeah.
Right. So that could be, if you're interested, let's talk, because that could be a good case. It's a short presentation of this was me, right? That could be so valuable for folks to hear so that they're going, oh my God, I better watch through this for my clients. Right.
Yeah.
What you did, what you wish you did, what you could have done differently. And I think it would be really helpful. So
yeah, so I'm happy to do it through Zoom because I will be all over the place in September. I have a training with Datis Karazian in mid-September, and then And then my family from China, they're coming at the end of September.
So oh boy.
Okay. It's going to be hard to.
Okay. Well, we'll see. I'll see how many I get live. I'm going, sure. I'm really trying to get like 3 out of 4 live. And I think Lisa's probably, but if she decides not to do it,
okay,
then I'd have that one opening for a Zoom.
Sure,
one.
Sure. Yeah.
Okay.
You know,
yeah.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Awesome.
Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you. Who else? Great to hear your style. The more I hear it from different voice helps me to understand the info. Yeah, that's true. Like we hear things over and over again. There's nothing new under the sun really, right? But we hear it from a different person, from a different perspective. And repetition is the way we learn, right? So that's good. Anybody have anything else for this call before we close it? I know this was an open coaching, but we spent most of the time on your presentation, which was great. But if anybody has any things they want to ask about, go for it. Valerie? Yeah.
I want to know when we're going to have our class on ultrasounding shoulders.
Oh, I was just going to do that with, let's do it. Just do you have your ultrasound?
I haven't figured it out yet.
Well, let's just plan it on the next call to just pull it out. And I'm sure other people will want to see that. So let's just plan it on for whatever our next call is.
I think Lynn Rose is interested too. She's,
I know one of my ERC people is interested too, because she just got one, and I'm trying to get my son to get one for ultrasounding ribs because he cracked a couple of ribs. And
it sounds like we may need an ultrasound class for the community.
Ultrasound class. Yeah. And I won't do it for the public community. I'll only do it individually because I don't want to get in trouble. Some of my colleagues are like, what do you mean you teach people how to get ultrasound? You got to send them to us to get ultrasound. I'm like, they can do it wrong. I'm like, I give them the precautions. I tell you not to do it over your spine or somebody else's spine unless you've been trained and you know all the precautions. But, and there's specific things we want to make sure that you don't do. You're not going to kill yourself. You may burn slightly. You're going to move it quickly if you stay too long, but I will teach it. But I wouldn't like do a webinar on how to ultrasound yourself. I don't want to get thrown in jail. Yeah, I won't do that. I won't expose myself that way. It's kind of like talking about vaccines in public. No, I'm not doing that. Right? We don't do that anymore. No, we get shut down really easily. And those people who still do it, more power to them. Erin Elizabeth, you know Erin Elizabeth, Joe Mercola's partner. I met her for the first time last weekend. She's a hoot. She is a total hoot. And she's just out there like, this is the truth and I'm going to share it. You know, yeah. I don't care who does anything or says anything, you know, we've got millions of followers. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So
yeah, I've just listened to her interview. She was interviewed on this Overcoming Hashimoto's summit. I think that was her. Yeah.
Yeah. She's been on a lot of summits.
She's like a straight shooter type of person.
She's a very straight shooter. Yeah. Yeah. You're not going to get any sugar coating with her.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. But you know, we need people like that, but she's not a professional. She's not, I mean, that's what she does. She considers herself an investigative health journalist and her job is to expose the truth about health. So she's not going to lose her license because she doesn't have a license. Right. And she says that right out. I don't have a license. I'm not a doctor. I'm just here to investigate health and give you the straight shooting truth. So she can't lose her license. She can't get shut down. She can't be accused of practicing medicine without a license because she's not. She's just sharing information, which is awesome. So I support her. But she is a hoot. I met her in person, and she's just like she is online. A little bit shy, though. Same as Mercola. Just has a little shyness to him, which I would never have expected. Yeah. Yeah. Very nice person, though.
Dr. Rita Marie.
Yeah.
Because I'm still having problems. Like I check my temperature and knowing that I have this conversion problem because of my cirrhosis and stuff. Is there still a way I can figure this out?
Have you done your, looked at your T4, T3 ratios?
I did it a while ago. I'm going to do new ones again. I could only do them so often, but before they were all fine. I didn't have antibodies or anything like that.
Well, that's good, but it sounds like a conversion issue or a receptor issue. Because if you look at your ratios and that chart mm-hmm. that's in, we have a list. It's from Dr. Rind in mm-hmm. the master tracker. It's right after the lab thing, and you put them in there and you want to see where they line up, because you can look and say, and this is another thing to really be aware when you're presenting to people. Yeah, you might be in the optimal range. You might have a T4 of 1.5, and you might have a T3 of 3. I'm talking free, but those are still skewed, right? The 3 is at the very low end of the range, and the 4 is in the middle of the range, and really they should be fairly well lined up. So looking at that chart is a good way to look at it. So even if your numbers are in the right range, it still can be a problem. And the same thing with reverse T3, right? It looks like it's in the right range, but if it doesn't have that ratio of greater than 20%, then there's an issue. There's too much reverse T3. And reverse T3 will put the brakes on. Reverse T3 will interfere with the uptake at the receptor level of free T3. Mm-hmm. So it's basically the brakes and 3T3, but you also want to look at why. Like, why is it? Is it that the person is taking too much Synthroid and it's being converted downstream to R3T3? Or is it because there's an infection somewhere else in the body and the body's trying to slow down the metabolism, right? An EBV, a hepatitis, something that the body's doing naturally, a gut infection, right? We want to slow down the metabolism and put the energy towards the inside and towards healing. So it's sometimes you can't try to outsmart the body. And that's what a lot of times medicine does, but also functional medicine sometimes too. It's like, okay, we're just going to try to get these numbers in the right range without asking the big why question. Like, why? Why is the body trying to slow us down? And that's a good question to ask. So for you, you know, your liver may not be converting as well, right? Because it's got the cirrhosis.
Okay, but if my, because you've seen my labs. I mean, every time I show you my labs, my liver, anything to do with my liver, they're all in better ranges than most people.
Yeah, they are. The last time I looked, I just don't remember what your thyroid
problem.
You could, because it could be a gut. And it could be just that there's something else.
Not from the liver, though.
It may not be. It may not be. Right?
Okay. Yeah. That's what I think. That's what I wanted to know in my head. Just took me that roundabout way.
Yeah, because if your liver enzymes are looking good and your liver function is looking good, and I forget, you still have your gallbladder, right?
No,
you don't have a gallbladder. So sometimes there's some backlog, right? If the liver is not flowing as freely, or it's doing the little drip feed. So the bile may not be excreting as well. So I'd have to look again, submit your stuff for the case, and we'll look at it again. But do the thyroid so that we can see how they line up. TSH, T4, T3 should really line up.
I'll really do those again.
Yeah.
Because I don't know, having my body temperature off, it's like when I go to the doctor, I feel feverish when it's 98.6. And they're like, no, you're normal. But I know I feel sick. So I just want,
because you know, it's kind of, that's a high temperature for you. And also you've got to look at the fact that the receptors, right? So your numbers can look perfectly normal, mm-hmm. but the receptor resistance and Jenny pointed out a bunch of reasons, the receptor resistance, but there's also elevated homocysteine. So that could be B12, B6 or folate deficiency. It could be deficiencies of vitamin A. That could be, you know, because of lack in the diet, but it could also be a genetic BCMO1, you know, homozygous polymorphism, right? So, so if I have this polymorphism, I need to get my vitamin A in there. So to make sure I protect my thyroid receptors. And then of course there's cortisol, right? And you've been through a period in your life of intense stress, right? So where is your cortisol and what is your cortisol doing to that conversion? High levels of cortisol, or after it's depleted, very low levels of cortisol interfere with that conversion or push it more towards reverse T3. So I'd get a complete panel and then look at, you know, have you done a Dutch yet?
Have I done what?
Dutch.
No, I'm working on my oats test because I was working with that virus I had. So I was taking a lot of medicinal mushrooms. I want to clear it out, and I'm going to find out.
Well, that's another reason, right? Viral infection. That was listed on Jenny's chart as well, right? A viral infection would interfere with that. So there's no one thing. Mm-hmm. Everybody goes, oh, oh, thyroid conversion, just give selenium, eat Brazil nuts, it's going to cure it. No, it's one of the issues, right? Selenium, right. Low selenium, it could be low magnesium, it could be low zinc, it could be vitamins, it could be cortisol high or low, and it could be liver dysfunction, gut dysfunction, could even be kidney dysfunction in people with severe kidney issues, right? Even though kidney is only a small amount of that conversion, but when you add it all up and if it's impaired in a couple of places, and then of course this, you know, the stress of kidney infection. So there's a lot. It's, you know, there's no one answer. People want to always like find the reason, right? But we have to just always ask all the right questions so that we can put it all together in a comprehensive approach. And you've been under a lot of stress for a long time, right? Yeah. And you've had some chronic infections, right? You've had heavy metal. You had mold exposure, right? Yeah, that'll be there too, right? All of that stuff adds up. So know that you're making the right decisions now. And that I think one of the things we all have to look at is trust, right? Let's learn what we need to do and trust that the body's going to heal it in the order that it's ready to heal it, not in the order that we think it should heal it. And, you know, if you're doing all the right things and it's still not going, you go, okay, what else can I do? What else can I do? What else can I do? But I think we always have to keep that trust. And that's what I try to impart on all my clients is that because so many of them are like, my body, better. They're angry at their body. And I'm like, love on your body. Just access that inner healer and say, I trust you. What should I do? Jenny didn't know what she knows now. So she made decisions back then that, you know, she can't do it. Just she said, well, do I regret it? I can't regret it because I couldn't do anything else at the time. What would I have done differently? I would have done this differently. So what do I do now that this is my situation? And it's a great attitude. And I think that's what we have to teach our clients because so many times they're just so caught up in hating their body and being angry with their body for not doing the right thing. But wait a minute, we made conscious choices to do kind of dumb things, not because we did, but because our parents didn't know, the doctors didn't know, we were given bad advice, but we can't go backwards with that. We can only go forwards and we can only go and love and access the inner healer and trust it and say, okay, I'm going to give you what you need. Tune in, be, you know, because sometimes intuition plays in too. You just kind of sit with it and you go, okay, what is my next step? And sit quietly and receive. And usually if you do a heart math or a meditation or something and get yourself into a state where you're open to receiving messages, sometimes you just go, okay, what's my next step? And then quiet the damn left brain for long enough to hear it. and you might see a color, you might hear a sound, you might get a vision, but the left brain is going to want to go, oh, we got to look at this pathway. Oh. Just quiet it down sometimes. Yes, it's all important, but sometimes we need to just go inside and let the intuition come up. And sometimes, you know, when I'm working with somebody, something just comes up and like I get this thing that this person needs to do. And it's very different from what my left brain might have been thinking or what they might have been thinking, but because I'm allowing myself to tune in to their energy. And for you, I get it's trust. You're a very smart person. You're very established left brain. You're trying to get your left brain to rule the roost. And it's good because it's helped you to learn things and make decisions. But sometimes you need to gather the information and then just allow it to sink in and give your body time to heal. And then go, okay, maybe I need to make a little course correction here. Okay, maybe I need a little course correction. But so many people, they'll do something for 3 days. And they go, well, that wasn't working. What's next? That's not the way the body works.
Yeah. Agree. Thank
Good
you.
Good stuff. Yes. So just
Thanks,
breathe.
Jenny.
You're welcome. Thank you for being here.
Yes. Let's see. Got to go, Claudia. Yes, Claudia, I'm glad you're here. How about the mycotoxin? Yeah, Janine was exposed to massive mycotoxins in her mold infested home that she was trying, you know, so yeah, I mean, that's a huge piece of it. Huge piece of it. Yeah. Okay. Anything else anybody wants to add or ask before we go? Did that answer your question, Valerie? I don't even remember what your question was. Oh, ultrasound, right? We'll do that on the next thing. Who else is interested in learning how to ultrasound themselves? You know, for $150 to $200, I think last time I looked, it was $167 or something. You get this ultrasound machine. Now, if you're going to go to a chiropractor or a physical therapist and have them do ultrasound on you, they're going to charge you $150 for the visit. Right? So you pay for it in one visit. Yeah, maybe you want to go to them and learn how, like what areas they're going to do. Like I told my son, I made an appointment with the chiropractor about his ribs, and he went in on Tuesday, got ultrasound for the first time. I said, go in on Thursday and ask him, how does he feel about you getting your own machine so you can do it every day? You can still go see him twice a week because I want him to monitor my kid, because I don't want to trust my kid to just do it on his own. But the studies all show that with ultrasound every day, and sometimes with like chronic frozen, like shoulder areas, twice a day even, who's going to go visit the chiropractor or physical therapist twice a day? First of all, even if you had unlimited funds to be able to do that, who has the unlimited time to be able to make the trek? You know what I mean? So you can really help with adhesions. It's super important. And more recently, I've been reading about its bone healing, and especially small bones like ribs and the little ones in your hand, if you break them, because sometimes they don't get good blood supply and they don't heal well. And the little ones in the foot, those bones don't heal as well. And it can really help promote the healing. But you have to do it the right way, and you have to do it on the right settings. And I'm happy to show you guys how.
Oh, I'm interested.
Okay, good. Yeah, because anybody who has chronic musculoskeletal stuff, I always forget about it. You know, I'll like trip and I'll do something and I'm limping around. I go, why don't I just use my ultrasound? I do it once or twice and the pain goes away, right? Or my hamstring. I gave it to my husband who had hip pain and low back pain. And I had him get some x-rays done. And it turned out he has some degenerative hip disease and degenerative disease, which is common in somebody who's like 69 years old. But it doesn't mean it's necessarily causing the issues, but what can he do? So he was going to physical therapists, which was great because they gave him the exercises. He wouldn't listen to me, right? He's my family. He's not going to listen to me when I tell him he has to do these exercises. So they gave him the exercises. They helped him with the posture. I said, but are they doing the ultrasound and getting into the joint and loosening it up and getting the, no, they're not. So I taught him how. And then every day he would sit on the couch with the ultrasound and within a couple of weeks, his pain was gone, right? Now he does it a couple of times a week. And if he feels something, like he twinges it at martial arts, because he's a fifth degree martial art person and he goes to these classes and he does all these stupid, you know, flip kick type of things, and then he re-injures. So he just knows what to do now. And I like to see that. I've seen people with the plantar fasciitis. Oh my God, it's so amazing for that. And that's so, you know, challenging to get rid of once you have it. So I taught him how to do that, and I gave him a ball. Like one of those, I think I have one somewhere over here, but you can get those. Claudia uses them. She uses them for vision training stuff, because she works on the trigger points. So you just do that, and you have somebody just sit while they're watching TV and roll their foot over the ball, and voila, you can get help. But if you add the ultrasound to that, it really helps, because it breaks up adhesions. And it helps. And there's different settings, so I'll teach you guys how to do that. There's the pulsed setting and the continuous setting, depending on what's the application. For the shoulders, you're going to use the continuous setting. For the bone repair, it's more of a pulsed setting. And you can be empowered to do that. You can't do that on your clients unless you have that kind of license as a physical therapist or a chiropractor. But you can teach them about it, or you can, you know, send them to go look. Before they start to take them off the market. It used to be you can only get them. You can only buy them if you're a physical therapist or a chiropractor. So I highly recommend that you buy them now while you can, before they make that, you know, unavailable again, because they're trying to, I don't know. I'm not a conspiracy theorist, so I'm not going to say it that way. I'm going to say it that a lot of people in the medical field and in the drug field are nervous about people becoming empowered to take charge of their own health. So there, you know, there's a lot of push to take away some of those rights. And so while we still have that ability, let's do it. Like, you know, like the things with the patches. Okay, come on. Like, why do you need a prescription to get a glucose patch, one of the continuous glucose meters? Like, seriously, you can buy Tylenol over the counter, which can kill you and wreck your liver, but you can't buy a continuous glucose meter. You need a doctor to prescribe it. Why? Because when people become empowered to take charge of their own blood sugar, then they're not going to need metformin and insulin. Just a theory. Anyway, so
it's different. It's not cold laser, right? This ultrasound you're talking about.
No, it's very different. Cold laser does have very strict requirements, because you can You got to be really careful about the eyes, and there's, it does require some good training for it.
Okay.
I mean, I think ultrasound, sure, we had a class on how to do it, but there's not a lot to it. I've taught my kid, I've taught my husband, I've taught clients how to do it, and I'll just teach you what to be aware of when you do it. Yeah. Cause I've had people like, oh my God, I've been limping around for 6 weeks and I did this thing 3 days later, my foot's fine now. Right. And it's just really good for those chronic and even acute musculoskeletal things that come up. You tear a hamstring and suddenly you're like, you're limping around. You get on that thing and you do it. With the hamstring, you want to be a little bit careful if it's at the insertion that you don't get too close to the genitals, for example, you know, but that kind of thing. All right, cool. So we'll have an ultrasound training. All right, guys, anything else before we go? Your energy techniques for laser and ultrasound too. Yeah, there's a lot. Who wrote that? Who was that? Lynn Rose. I have one I haven't used yet. Yes. The energy techniques. Yeah. There's a lot of things you can do with it. That's, you know, they're not just widely used. There's a new thing I looked at. I think it's super expensive. Dr. Pompa was showing it for his son. They're using some kind of sound sonar thing, but I think it's a very expensive machine. I'm going to contact the person he wrote in there to see what it is, but it has some properties of bone healing and musculoskeletal stuff, and even supposed to stimulate stem cells. But you know, I think it's right now, I think it's only very few practitioners have the machine and you have to go to them to get the thing. And it's not widely available. So I'm going to look into what's available there. I have a feeling it's a couple of $1,000 machine rather than a couple $100 like the ultrasounds are. Okay. For those of you who don't have an ultrasound and you're interested, do you remember what that link was we had the other day, Lynn? We had a link. I think I still might have it up here.
I think it's lgmedsupply.com. LG Med Supply.
Oh, LG Med Supply. And yeah. And then there was ultrasound. ULTRASOUND. And they have it. Here we go. It's a TENS machine. Portable ultrasound with, here's one. And this one's even cheaper than the one the other day. This one might not be as good as the other one though, because the other one was no, that's not as good. Let me just do ultrasound. I think I did something like ultrasound home units. Here we go. And it's taken extra 20% off. And that's the combo TENS, stronger Pro Series ultrasound unit with carrying case, gel, and AC adapter. Here's one. Yeah. Here we go. I'll give you the link. I don't know if this is the one you got, Valerie, but you know. I know mine was like $1,200 when I bought it like 25 years ago or 30 years ago. Still works. There you go. There's one, and you can poke around there, but just make sure you read it. And it is an ultrasound machine and it has continuous impulse that has multiple settings. Some of them are just like real basic and they don't have any specific settings. And then, you know, there's also things on there on that site, like TENS machines and all that's very different. Okay. I don't know if they have interferential machines. That would be kind of cool. That would be another story for another day, but because you can do that for people who have a hard time with exercise and, or if they have an injury and we don't want the specific area to atrophy. Let me see, INTERFER, and that's another machine that I paid like, you know, thousands on for interferential quad muscle stims, interferential unit Wow, $200. That's pretty cool. TENS and muscle stimulator and interferential. I'll just show you what it is and you can read about it, but you can research muscles, Russian stem. All that in one unit. It's $167. Yeah, this stuff, like all the electronic stuff, you know, it just keeps coming down, whereas other stuff goes up over the time. TENS, electric muscle, interferential. Yeah. Okay. Here, I'm going to put this in here too. You guys can look at. If anybody gets one of those, I can show you how to use it as well. My my younger son, he would play with his friends. I found out later when they'd come over, he'd go, watch this. And he'd put the electrodes on them and have them like contract, relax. And I found that out from a mom. Oh, yeah, my son said, my son said your son does acupuncture on him. I'm like, you get me thrown in jail. He was my kid who learned how to do acupuncture and used to do it on me when he was 4 or 5 years old because he was so curious. And that's another story. I wish he would go into the health field, but he's not. He's a musician. So not that I wish he wasn't a musician, but you can't make a living as a musician for a long time. So it'd be nice to have the health thing as a backup. All right, guys. Anybody else? I'm going to unmute you all. So if anybody has anything to say, good night, everybody. Thank you so much, Jenny. You did an amazing job. And there we go. You're all unmuted. You did an amazing job. And thank you so much for sharing. And whoever is going to be next, let us know and you can do yours.
Well, thank you so much. Thank you so much for the opportunity. And also thank you, everybody who actually is here tonight. Yeah, that's awesome.
Good support. And Eva, I heard you did a great job on your function.
Okay.
You had really good stuff about that. Yeah. Thank I wish you. I would have been there. That was last week, right? Yeah. I heard some really good stuff about it. So good job.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Yeah. Yay. All right, guys. Much love. We'll talk to you soon.
Bye.
Good night.